Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, I love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And I'm Deblaina Chakraborty.
And where we left off last time, we were talking about a story from the old Western frontier, specifically talking about Cynthia Ann Parker and her son, Quanah Parker, who was the last Comanche chief. And it's been a sad story so far, one that we really kicked off with Cynthia Ann's own kidnapping when she was only 9 years old.
Yeah, focusing mostly on her life and what happened after that kidnapping. She was taken from her Texas family home, she and her brother and some more of her relatives. And while most of them were ransomed back, she never surfaced. They were never able to get her back or to find her. She was just sort of lost to them.
Even hear a word of her until the mid-1840s, when reports of her started to pop up. And soon enough, the picture was pretty clear. She was alive and well and was, in fact, living as a Comanche. She had been raised by Comanche parents. She eventually went on to marry a Comanche war chief named Peta Nokana, who was, interestingly, also her captor, and had 2 sons with him, Quanah and Peanut, and a daughter named Prairie Flower. And by all accounts, seemed to be completely content with her life, which was clearly something that disturbed the other settlers.
They did sort of learn of her whereabouts and tried to ransom her back like they did the other relatives, and she would not go.
No, she wouldn't go, and her people said, you cannot, you'd have to kill us. You cannot take her. We will not ransom her for any sum. And, you know, I would imagine that would be relieving to hear that she was alive to her family, but most people were concerned about the news because here was this woman, you know, she had been kidnapped as a child and she was happy in her new life. She was happy living among the Comanche. She had no wish to return to her life with the settlers. So where we left off specifically, though, Cynthia Ann was going back whether she liked it or not. She had just been recaptured.
Yeah, she had been recaptured and taken back to live with her biological family. And when we saw her last, she was not happy about this. She was very sad because she felt that she knew in her heart that her husband and her sons had been killed.
Yeah, she believed that they had both her sons and her husband had been killed in the raid where she was captured. And she also just knew her life as a Comanche woman was over. And I mean, aside from believing that her husband and sons were murdered, she was entirely miserable in this new situation. She tried to escape repeatedly from her family. And what makes it all the more sad is that she wasn't allowed to go back to her people, clearly, but she wasn't allowed to leave or lead a retiring life either. She was put into the public eye because, of course, she had been a well-known person since her kidnapping at age 9. I mean, we mentioned in the last episode, she was even used as a warning. Mothers would warn their children, don't wander too far from the house or you might end up like Cynthia Ann. So clearly the news of her recapture was huge, all over papers nationwide. And she ended up being celebrated in Austin, but clearly the crowd intimidated her. The attention frightened her. It was a woman who had gone through a lot of trauma recently, and it was almost more like she was being put on display as some kind of curiosity rather than somebody who they were genuinely glad to have back.
Right. So she lived with her uncle for a time and then with her brother, Silas Parker. And then finally, she lived with her younger sister, Orleana. Neighbors remembered her as being incredibly helpful during this time. For example, she could tan hides, she sewed, she chopped wood, she even made herbal remedies. But they also remembered her as being incredibly sad. She was said to have slashed herself in a Comanche expression of grief. The moves to different family members just took her further and further away from the frontier and deeper into the forest.
They would promise that maybe they'd let her go visit her family and her friends at certain points. But yeah, they were just moving her further and further away from the country that she'd always lived in. Prairie Flower seemed to thrive. You know, she was obviously just a very young girl when her mother was recaptured. She grew up learning English, studying, but she unfortunately died in 1864 of pneumonia. And after that point, Cynthia Ann really had no connection left to her old life and seemed to spiral, and died a few years later in 1870, also possibly of pneumonia or the flu. But like a lot of the story and a lot of the stories related to Quanah's life, there are different accounts depending on the source you look in. And a lot of sources say that she starved herself to death. So that's basically the end of Cynthia Ann's story. Even though she does come into play later in Quanah's life, he remains devoted to his mother and really inspired by her story when he's a warrior, but also inspired by her, I don't know, her double capture as a man when he's trying to reconcile his own two sides.
So now we're going to kind of switch from Cynthia Ann's life and look at Quanah and his brother. We're not sure exactly. We talked about this a little bit in the last podcast. We're not exactly certain what happened to Cynthia Ann's husband, but we can be pretty sure of what happened to Peanut. He died of smallpox, and Quanah came out of this terrible experience. I mean, think about all the things that happened to him. He was orphaned quite young. Either way, no matter which story about what happened to his father you
believed.
Whether
his father died in the raid or whether he died, as Quanah said, a couple years later.
Right. But he came out of it a competent warrior. He was strong and taller than most of his peers at 6 feet tall. His first major raid in 1868 at age 20 was kind of a disaster, though. It was an old-style raid where youngsters would make their names by stealing some horses on these incredible long, sometimes multi-year treks into Mexico. And this one in particular was commanded by a Kiowa war chief. The whole group almost starved. They went 2 days without water twice, and clearly times were changing. I mean, the Mexican settlements were aggressive, and they weren't able to steal that many horses. In fact, Quanah arrived back at camp on foot,
which is terribly humiliating. Yeah, I mean, just to think of this raid compared to what raids might have been like in Quanah's father's age, where you could expect on one of these multi-year treks, you know, a 1,000-mile trip or something, of coming back, having made a name for yourself, having amassed a certain amount of wealth. Horses were the measure of wealth for Comanche, too. You know, that was how you would pay a dowry and get married. It was the basis for a lot of their life. So as a young man, setting yourself up with a lot of horses was a good way to start out. But clearly it wasn't easy pickings anymore. Things were getting tougher for the Comanche. And Quanah did take part in more raids that year in Texas. And it's worth noting here that some sources go out of their way to explain Quanah didn't participate in what most people would consider war atrocities. And we went over quite a few of these in the last episode. But the raids where rape is involved, murdering children, kidnapping, torturing people, mutilating people or mutilating bodies, which, of course, were a political tactic of war by the Comanche or by various tribes to try to force settlers off the land, to try to scare them so badly. It's not about numbers. It's about terrifying people into leaving and reclaiming their land that way. But a lot of sources seem to absolve Quanah of a lot of things like that. And S.D. Gwynn, the author of Empire of the Summer Moon, points out that violence was a pretty standard thing for a young Comanche warrior to participate in, as both an intimidation tactic, like I just described, and of course also an act of revenge for captured family members, for murdered family members. Regardless, though, of what Quanah did on these raids specifically, he did come to prominence in his early 20s after two fights in particular, and both really show leadership and resolve more than anything.
Yeah, in one, his raiding party was attacked and the war chief was killed. And as we saw in the Jim Bowie episode, this usually led to just complete chaos because the warriors would try to collect their chief's body. But in this case, Quanah stepped up and shouted new directions.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
He also challenged a soldier in what Gwen describes as kind of a joust, and he got shot in the leg, but he shot his target also in the shoulder with an arrow. And his party managed to escape, and they elected him their leader that night.
The second incident was in the summer of 1869, where his raiding party murdered a man driving an oxen team. When a party rode out to pursue them, Quanah, instead of fleeing, hunkered down in the bushes and ended up lancing two men. And his guys saw this. It urged them on to continue the fight. The battle ended up being a draw. I think the Comanche party ran out of ammo. But again, the party was really impressed by Quanah's leadership, by his bravery, and elected him as the leader. So consequently, Quanah became a leader among his people in an age when most of his battles were going to be more about survival, you know, not like that first raid into Mexico we talked about. They were going to be more about survival and protecting a way of life than stealing horses or intimidation. Because by 1870, there were only about 4,000 Comanche left and only about 1,000 who hadn't gone on the reservation left. So this hadn't gone on yet. So this free life that they were leading, was clearly waning.
And the Civil War's end really saw an uptick in the government and military response to the few free Native Americans who were left in the West. William Tecumseh Sherman, as General-in-Chief of the Army, was intensely concerned with protecting the railroad interests out West, ending the Plains Indian Wars, and really forcing the remaining Native Americans, like Quanah's Quahati Band, onto reservations.
Yes, the Quahati Band, and we described on the last podcast how the Comanche were broken into these autonomous bands. They were one that had rejected this treaty called the Medicine Lodge Treaty in 1867, trying to move the remaining tribes, the remaining bands, onto the reservation. So clearly they were a target. In addition to being the Comanche band with maybe the fiercest reputation, they were a holdout as well. S.E. Gwin ominously called this situation in 1871, quote, the beginning of the final solution. And it's also right when Quanah was becoming a big name as a talented young war chief. Even though, interestingly, you might think, since Cynthia Ann was such a celebrity, a national celebrity, even though she had passed on by this point, you might think that he would be connected to her publicly. But even though his mother's name was in national papers by this point, their relation wasn't public until 1875. So people were pursuing the son of a woman they had assuredly heard about.
And just a side note here, Sherman actually came close to death himself on a tour of the area during this time. A Kiowa raiding party ended up bypassing his group for superstitious reasons, though, and they hit a wagon train instead in what was called the Salt Creek Massacre.
So Sherman knew exactly what was going on. But the last real attempt by Quanah and the Quahati to defend themselves against settlement came in June of 1874, along with a man named Isatai, who was a Comanche warrior and a medicine man who I really wish I had gotten to read even more about. He sounded like a pretty fascinating figure. He had achieved a certain amount of unity among the bands, and he, along with Quanah, led anywhere between 250 and 700 Comanche, Cheyenne, and Kiowa warriors in an attack at Adobe Walls, Texas. And, I mean, you'd think with numbers like that, there were just about 30 buffalo hunters inside, but the attack was a disaster. The buffalo hunters had these rifles with a really long range shot, and Quanah ended up being pretty badly wounded. It didn't go well, and the U.S. Army retaliated really forcefully as well afterwards. So Quanah and the Quahati he was with managed to hold out for about a year after that before he finally had to admit that the fight was over. He surrendered at Fort Sill. He acknowledged he was the son of Cynthia Ann at this point, so it's 1875, and he agreed to relocate to a southwest Oklahoma reservation and encourage his people to resettle to.
And it's interesting, government agents ultimately made him tribal chief over all Comanche, a distinction that clearly hadn't existed in the previous era of autonomous bands that we have been talking
Chief
about this entire
time. Chief of all Comanche. Right. It wouldn't have been something before.
Sure. And understandably, some Comanche people did not take this distinction very well. You can imagine the full range of criticisms that they might have. I mean, they could think that he didn't have the right to speak for their people, or that his government approval was somehow illegitimate.
Or even made him illegitimate. The fact that the government named him tribal chief discounted him somehow.
Right away. And also his mixed race ancestry. They could have thought that this made him somehow suspect. And there's also the fact that they might have thought that he sold out in the first place.
But I mean, if you look at it, clearly a lot of other people did follow his lead, whether that was out of respect for who he was, you know, for his bravery as a warrior and his reputation as a warrior, or just because he seemed like the most promising person to follow at the time, because he just had this determination to make reservation life successful and get as much as he could for the Comanche people. But he was undeniably an effective mediator between two worlds, you know, between the world of his people and the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And just to name a few things that he really focused on, he had the problem of what was he going to tell people who are used to leading a nomadic life, you know, covering thousands of acres on horseback, hunting. How was he going to convince them that settling on a reservation was going to be a way to go? And he really encouraged them to take up agriculture and ranching and even get into money-making enterprises like leasing their land to other ranchers. He himself put forth a good example with this. He became quite wealthy off of his own ranching, but also investments into real estate and into railroad stocks.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
He also became a huge supporter of education, and he acted as a judge in tribal courts and really encouraged the formation of a tribal police force. He also advocated for the Comanche, regularly traveling to Washington, D.C. And he became friends with some notables like Charles Goodnight, who'd been present at the raid where Cynthia Ann was captured.
And Goodnight had gone on to become a big man since then, a cattle baron. So he was an important figure at the time.
And he also became friends with Teddy Roosevelt, attending his inauguration in 1905. And he even hosted Roosevelt at his own Oklahoma home, Star House.
But in addition to this mediating between two cultures and going to Washington, trying to get what he could, he insisted on maintaining as much of his culture as he could as well. For one main thing is not giving up polygamy. He had quite a few wives. He had 24 children. And it ultimately got him dismissed from the tribal court. His insistence on, I think he may have promised that he wouldn't marry any additional wives and kind of went back on that. Just a really strange note, though. It was the polygamy that really bothered the government guys, not Quanah's past as a war chief. I mean, as a very successful war chief who had participated in raids, that was sort of whitewashed almost.
Yeah, the polygamy was the controversial part.
Mm-hmm.
And he also defended the right to use peyote in Native American church rituals. Sometimes his culture kind of took on a sideshow aspect when he'd participate in Wild West shows, or sometimes he would play up how people expected him to sound or to talk. But Quanah saw these shows and even the mock attacks as a way to display his culture to people who really had no understanding of Comanche life. So it was almost like there was an educational aspect to him acting in this way.
Yeah,
so that's how he said he saw it.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. Just he seemed very shrewd about his understanding of what other people knew, what other people thought Comanche were like, and wanting to teach them more in any way he could. And in some respects, he seems to have combined his two worlds pretty effortlessly. I mean, just in terms of dress, and I know this is a superficial thing, but also it clearly meant something to him. He would wear a suit while he was traveling, but he preferred to wear moccasins instead of boots. And he would wear a Stetson hat, but he kept his hair in braids. I mean, any picture of him, he will have long hair, sometimes his braids wrapped in what looks like fur, and wearing beads. He learned to drive a car. He seemed to relish maintaining aspects of his culture, but indulging in what he found pleasurable in his new life as well.
And he was successful in a lot of ways. He was really successful as a mediator and a peacemaker, and he didn't join in with the Ghost Dance uprising in the 1890s. And so these facts make some of the later events in his life kind of all the more tragic. For example, in 1901, the federal government broke up the Comanche reservation and redistributed the land. Also, a young son of his died in 1906 of whooping cough.
And this is maybe the most poignant. I mean, clearly the breaking up the reservation was a big blow to him, and a lot of people just left at that point, like, okay, we're not going to do this anymore. He did stay put. But one really poignant and tragic aspect of this, especially for a man who thought that education was clearly the way to success, his 8-year-old son was dismissed from public school in Oklahoma because white parents had complained. He ended up having to go to a school just for Native American children instead. But it was upsetting for Quanah to see that, for somebody who had worked so hard to be a mediator and to embrace certain aspects of this new culture he was in, to have it just turn around on
him. And for
him.
Somebody to whom education was so important.
Yeah, and to see that happen to his son. But probably the real kicker here is he wouldn't have been eligible to be a U.S. citizen until more than 10 years after his death. Something that's just, I don't think we need to make any more comment on that. But we mentioned this at the beginning and at the end of the last episode, too, that clearly, even though Quanah was separated from his mother at a very young age, she left a big impression on him and the circumstances of her life, that she had been captured as a girl by the Comanche and then that she had been captured again by her own people. And he was really haunted by her story.
In 1910, when his mother and sister were reinterred, he said, quote, 40 years ago, my mother died. She captured by Comanches, 9 years old. Love Indian and wildlife so well, she no want to go back to white folks. All same people anyway, God say. So before he died at Star House in 1911, he requested that he be buried not with his wives, but with his mother and his sister. And his grave reads, quote, resting here until day breaks and shadows fall and darkness disappears is Quanah Parker, last chief of the Comanche.
And that is, in fact, true, because from that point on, the Comanche call their elected leaders chairman rather than chief. So a truly remarkable life, sad story, somebody who just, I don't know, I think maybe just the talent he showed in these wildly different worlds was what stood out to me. And that's just so poignantly mirrored by Cynthia Ann's horrible misfit sort of life. I mean, I know she did come to a comfortable situation among her Comanche people, but just being a captive twice in her life, they sort of twin each other in a very sad but fascinating sort of way. One more thing I just wanted to mention, too. Recently, Jonathan and I recorded an episode on codes in World War II, mm-hmm. and we talked quite a bit about code talkers, focusing on the Navajo code talkers. But we did mention the Comanche as well, and how the language was so complex. You know, it was a natural choice and one that they felt, or one that the military felt that it was unlikely the language had been compromised. You know, it was unknown to outsiders. And, I started just sort of thinking about that in terms of generations and thinking those young men who are Comanche code talkers, I mean, this would have been their grandparents would have lived at the same time as Quanah Parker, potentially, and how closely tied that is to this era, and to have these men who signed up to go serve, I believe that most of the Comanche were in Europe, in the European theater, but to have them sign up, they were thrilled to be able to use their language in an official capacity and serve the United States and serve with their cousins and their friends. Just tying all that together was neat to do.
And while we're on the topic of the importance of the Comanche language, we should give another shout out to Dr. Day, right, Sarah?
Dr. Kenneth Day of the Learn Comanche Project.
Yeah, I think he said that they might have an online learning course coming up sometime soon in the future, so that'll be interesting.
We did our best with our Comanche pronunciation.
We tried. Any mistakes that we made are not any result of any advice that he gave us.
And we will say it's supposed to be a notoriously hard language, so, you know.
Give ourselves a little pat on the back there for
well,
trying.
Just excusing any possible slips, you know. We did our best.
So we have kind of a mixed bag of mail today. We have a little email, and then I think we have some real mail, right, Sarah?
We do.
So first of all, we have a note from Kristen, and she says, I wanted to send you a picture of what I'm working on while listening, the scroll to my final viola. I'm finishing violin making school in Chicago and have been working my way through every episode for the past few months. Your podcast keeps me more focused than music, especially the last 6 weeks for my final exam. She goes on to give us some music-related episode suggestions, and we'll just hang on to those in case we use them in the future.
We love music podcasts.
We
do. So much fun to do. And we also saw some of her pictures, too, of the instruments she's working on. They're really beautiful, and it looks like a super fun thing to be training for. We also wanted to thank a couple of our listeners who sent us in stuff. Listener Tepi, and I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, sent us a comic called Murder Dollhouse that he illustrated himself, which is really cool.
That sounds like kind of a spooky story.
Well, plus all these awesome little postcards with illustrations that have funny sayings, such as, I'm not a bowl of milk, I don't mix with flakes. Also, thank you to listener Judy, who sent us some information about the museum she works at, too. She's at Epworth by the Sea in St. Simons, which is Georgia. So thank you both. Have you ever been to St. Simons, Jablina?
I have not.
It's a nice little place.
That's what I hear.
I like South Georgia trips. I have one branch of the family is from down there, so
oh, cool.
It's fun to visit. Anyway, thank you both for sending along nice gifts like that, and thank you too for all the emails we receive, such as our instrument maker.
Yeah, if you want to send us any notes about what you're doing while you're listening to the podcast, or you want to give us some suggestions like this listener did, you can write us at we're at historypodcast@discovery.com, or you can look us up on Facebook, and we're on Twitter at Mist in History.
And if you want to learn more history topics, more culture topics, all sorts of things like that, we of course have tons and tons of articles, all of them to be found on our homepage at www.howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take more control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.